This week on Who, What, Where, When, Why, the segment where we go a little deeper into the news, I'm joined by freelance journalist Still Garion. He writes for publications such as Crikey and ZDNet. He is interested in internet issues, especially security and cybercrime. And today we're asking, what is our Attorney General George Brandis proposing to do about dreaded internet piracy? Thanks so much for being there today, Still Garion.
My pleasure, Michelle.
Now, I think out of this, the most important question I have here is, how much risk is there for me the next time I want to download the latest episode of Girls?
Or, some other quality program. the risk is not so much the next time, because whatever we do about trying to address illegal copying on the internet, it's going to take time to implement it. But what worries me is that further down the track, because these unauthorised downloads have been such a common activity, particularly in Australia, I mean, you know, we're world leaders in illegal downloads, which is, I don't know whether we need to be terribly thrilled with that or not, there is a global push to just start making the penalties for this sort of thing much greater, and even introducing potentially criminal penalties. So it becomes a kind of little stick that can be held over someone's head much down the track and say, look, if you don't cooperate for this thing over here, we'll just have a look through your download history and see if we can hit you with something there. That's perhaps a bit the kind of evil of government viewpoint. But when Attorney General Brandis was speaking last week in Canberra on Friday, he made it very clear that he's going to be on side of the existing copyright industries and come down with something. We don't know exactly what the plan is yet, but there will be certainly increased focus and law enforcement focus on illegal downloads.
So defenders of this would say that these kind of reforms that he is proposing to Australian copyright law would protect the TV and film industries, so that, you know, more money funnels back into those industries. Do you think that that has some truth in it? You know, surely content makers have a right to protect their output.
Oh, absolutely. Look, the people who spend money on making TV, music, films, whatever, obviously deserve to get paid for their work. But what we're looking at here is really the distribution of that content. You know, it's not about, you know, I like pointing out that, you know, when we had this same problem with the music distribution industry a few years ago, it's, oh, you know, the internet will destroy the CD industry, which it has, and instead it turned things like Apple's iTunes stores into, you know, multi-million dollar, billion dollar businesses, because most of the money that was spent getting band A's music to fan B was actually spent on all of the pieces in the middle. I mean, you know, a CD was, what, $20? The band would be lucky to get, you know, $2 of that. 90% of it went to all of the people in the middle, the distribution mechanisms, if you like. And the whole point of the internet is that distributing data becomes much, 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 much cheaper. So what concerns me is all of the attention that's been given to protecting the creative industries. It's not the creative industries that are taking all the money here in the middle and trying to protect their revenue streams. It's the distribution industries. We're talking about the aggregators of copyright material, if you like, the studios or the TV networks or, you know, the music labels. We're talking about the wholesalers and then the retailers. So, you know, really, they're the ones who have got to work out how to do what they do more cheaply. And what frustrates me about the kind of statements that the Attorney General's made is that it's not recognising that difference between the creators and the distributors. It's, you know, it's all about propping up old-fashioned and outdated analogue distribution models, which you know, the newer technologies can work around, but particularly here in Australia at the moment, the distributors aren't saying, hey, we can do this a lot more cheaply. They're saying, how can we protect our high-margin operation?
So it does obviously just always come down to money still, Garian, but exactly what you're talking about here has just been illustrated by just recently the makers of Game of Thrones, which is HBO, decided to team up with Foxtel in Australia, and they have a clause that says the new season wouldn't be available on iTunes or Apple TV until the entire season had been played on Foxtel. Now, a lot of people sort of saw that as being, well, this is an invitation for people just simply download. Is the problem singular to Australia? Do these sorts of issues about people wanting to buy content straight away happen in the US? Do we have that comparison?
The vast majority of the material that is being affected by this is made in the US. So they already have, they don't have this territorial issue, if you like. I mean, if Game of Thrones is a classic example. Like so much of our television, it's from the US. And therefore, they already have those direct distribution arrangements. They already have Netflix. They can already talk to the iTunes stores. And they're talking about quite a big bit of money, so they want to get their product out there in as many outlets very quickly and maximise the interest while they have, you know, that surge of interest when a new episode comes out. Here in Australia, we're talking about quite a small market. You know, the bigger players are Netflix or someone, you know, doesn't really want to get into the whole problem of stuffing around with a market that's really only what, just under 23 million people, particularly as we don't have the same level of broadband infrastructure yet. We don't quite have the number of people who are willing to pay for streaming downloads yet. And we have a lot of existing distribution agreements. So we do have those things that when something's produced on a certain network in the US, then automatically it goes, you know, to Foxtel or to Channel 10 because they have those kind of relationships. And those people simply aren't interested in negotiating something that cuts them out of the loop entirely. That's the problem. Where the whole point of the internet as well is that it's global. You don't need a local company and local executives and local BMW leases to make the thing operate. You just set up a Netflix sales office in Australia, people plonk down their credit card numbers and completely bypass any sense of having an Australian distributor at all. So it's not unique to Australia, but because of our small market size and because of the fact that we are here at the arse end of the planet, we've had an industry which has been able to sort of stay fat and lazy for quite a time.
Do you think then that the government understands, you know, you just created a scenario there which would make it eminently possible and easy for people to pay for the content that they want to pay for rather than downloading? Do you think the government understands that it could be that simple? On Friday, when Brandis was addressing the Australian Digital Alliance Copyright Forum, he described the Copyright Act as overly long, unnecessarily complex, and often comically outdated, and all too often in its administration, pointlessly bureaucratic. Are the changes that he's flagging likely to result in less bureaucracy?
But there is some of that, and we're talking about quite a comprehensive set of recommendations on copyright form from the Australian Law Reform Commission. They spent quite a bit of time on it, and there's all manner of really good stuff in it. The thing that is a small part of what the proposals are about, but it's the what do we do about, you know, three strikes rules, warning people about downloading, you know, all of that kind of guilt by accusation. Hey, your internet service provider says you've been doing illegal downloading. But the government is not a monolith. It's funny that on Sunday afternoon, I actually heard a keynote address by Paul Fletcher, who's the government's parliamentary secretary for communications. And when asked, he said straight up that, well, the government certainly isn't interested in stopping players like Netflix coming to Australia or whatever. They're perfectly free to come and set up shop just like any others. He said, you know, he repeated that line of Tony Abbott's, that Australia is open for business. So there's nothing governmental stopping this from happening. There's, in fact, nothing all that technical stopping it from happening either. In fact, Mark Newton, who's a very high-profile network engineer in Australia, just said on Twitter the other night that you could actually bring Netflix to Australia and roll it out with just one rack of equipment at a data centre in, you know, a couple of different data centres in Australia. It's not that big a deal technologically either. It's purely down to whether companies like Netflix can be bothered going to the effort of serving a market like Australia at, as I said, 20 million people, when they could say, yeah, we could go to Thailand for twice that. We could, you know, go into Germany. We can go into Brazil. You know, Australia expects high profit margins all the time, and we're not interested in serving them.
Yeah, I want to just go back a little bit to the penalising nature of what our Attorney General said last week, talking about that three strikes rule for alleged copyright infringers. Mm. What does that mean? And could that be enforceable? And in that is also, you would have to have the cooperation of ISPs to hand over that information. Does that happen in Australia at the moment?
Look, it does. It's the enforceability of it that's the issue. And this goes back to the big federal court trial, which went all the way to the High Court between the film and TV industry and IINet, the so-called II trial. Now, the TV industry, the film industry, had been saying, look, we have these copyright infringement notices that you know, we want to hand on to your customers. And while some of the internet service providers said yes, IINet said no. Sorry, who are you? What you know, if you want us to start communicating on behalf of you, some unknown third party, then come back with a court order. If you're alleging that someone has broken the law, then take them to the federal court. But we're certainly not going to, you know, breach the privacy of our customers. Now, that all went up to the High Court, and the High Court supported IINet, but it all came down to specific questions about the way the process had been done. And I remember sitting in the federal court myself one day where the judge even said, wait, if you're arguing this, then what's to stop us all being back here in 6 months' time because you've changed the process? And the answer was nothing. Well, nothing. You know, this could all happen again. What Brandis is suggesting might happen is, well, a change to the law that would put some teeth behind this. The idea that, okay, you know, that there would be some sort of monitoring, and the technology exists for this, to see whether someone is downloading, you know, Game of Thrones or whatever, to then send that customer a warning to say, hey, we've detected that you're doing this. That's not allowed. Second warning, hey, you're doing it again. We must tell you that you may be cut off. And then the third one is, well, look, you know, you've been caught by us three times doing illegal downloads. Your account with this ISP now has to be cancelled. Now, there's all sorts of issues with this. As I said earlier, it's guilt by accusation. You know, where is the proof? Where is the chance for the person to say no? Secondly, that just because a particular user account has been used for something, you haven't actually pinned it on a person. It could be anyone in the household. It could be the next door neighbour who's borrowed your Wi-Fi password, or it could be a mistake. Some European countries have ruled these kind of laws unconstitutional because they violate human rights. Finland and I think France and a couple of others have started pointing out that the internet is now so much a part of our culture that cutting someone off from the internet is, you know, as I say, interfering with their human rights to participate in society. There's also some academic work by Rebecca Giblin at Monash University, I think she is. She's a lawyer there. These schemes don't actually work to reduce the occurrence of piracy.
Why is that? I have to be honest, if I was sitting on my computer doing something and got a message straight away, I think I'd be pretty terrified.
I think I would be too, and then part of me goes, stuff it, I'll change to another internet service provider next week. I'll use a mate's account. I'll do it at the library. There are ways around. And, you know, that gives me the point to mention that it's a classic statement, but the whole point of the internet is to route streams of digital data all over the world, and if something tries to block it, say something breaks, to route around that very quickly. And, you know, Gilmore's Law sort of said, yeah, the internet interprets censorship as damage and just routes around it, whether that's technically automatically in the case of automatic damage, or whether it's just because the geeks invent some simple ways of doing it and then distribute tools to make it easy for everyone. Look, this, I suppose, comes back to a fundamental conflict between the way the internet works and the way our legal systems work. Mm. Legal systems work on the basis of nation states, and the internet is a global thing. And
well, I guess that's intrinsic too to how our governments work, and
yeah,
and
absolutely.
How it's different in that respect too.
Absolutely, and that's the thinking. So, you know, our governments are working with laws here and businesses here that are complaining, so they're trying to erect various walls on the internet, if you like, to make it work the way they want it to work. But, you know, it comes down to that. I can't get Game of Thrones here in Australia and I want to watch it and it's going to take 2 weeks. No, I'll just, you know, next time I'm visiting the US, I'll create a US iTunes account. I will log in through a virtual private network so I look like I'm in the US. And as far as Netflix is concerned, I'm an American customer. They'll give me the program to watch.
And you can pay for it in that way.
For a few dollars a month.
So, still, Garen, what's your understanding then of what happens now? These are obviously recommendations. I suspect it's opening up a sort of another can of worms. But do these ideas play into the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreements that are happening at the moment?
I mean, it does all kind of connect up. The various part drafts of the TPP have come out, have included things like, although, you know, no one except the US wanted this, but to actually make these sort of copyright infringements into a criminal offence. So it weren't just, you know, you get a fine or a ticket or your internet cut off, but you were now committing a crime. Now, that sort of stuff pretty much out of it. But the kind of three strikes rules, the ability to warn people and so on is again built into these frameworks. They kind of also tend to bias the large content creators and distributors because they're the ones who can put together a department to pay the investigators to talk to the internet service providers and come up with a list of 30,000 people who've illegally downloaded Game of Thrones. But if you are someone who's quite legitimately, you know, remixed a track and put it with your own videos and whatever, or you've made a parody, or you have a music collection or a film collection that you've legitimately bought and it's on your hard drive, and you then back that up to a cloud backup service on the internet, which you're perfectly entitled to do under Australian law, make a backup of your data, but the automatic systems of the internet service provider say, oh, you're copying all these movies over the internet, you criminal. It's something that, you know, we need to see how specific laws are going to be written. But to come back to what we have now, we have a report on the table with a whole lot of recommendations. The Attorney General's looking at it. He says he's not convinced about certain aspects of the report, but he's got an open mind. So what happens now is the political process happens of, well, what will the Attorney General do with this report? And his range of options range from implementing all of the recommendations to doing nothing to implementing completely different things because his political party decides something else or whatever. I mean, governments have a great history of completely ignoring the recommendations of independent reports. So now it's down to politics, it's down to lobbying, and I must say that the movie and TV industries and their distributors in Australia have well-funded, well-briefed and well-rehearsed lobby groups that are going to be wanting to get things done their way. And if people want something different to happen, well, it's about political organisation, and I'm talking a lot more than putting, you know, a hashtag on Twitter or something like that. It's getting out there and writing letters to MPs and putting arguments together and so on.
Hmm.
But so far we don't know whether there will be any more public process or not.
Well, thanks so much for your time this morning, Stilgarian. We'll keep an eye on it, and you can always find all of your writing, of course, at stilgarian.com and in Crikey and ZDNet. Thanks so much for your time this morning, Stilgarian.
No worries, Michelle, anytime.
We'll chat to you soon.